Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're kind of stuck with me. And if you'd like to talk to us about a car or something like that, the easiest way to get a hold of us is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if we can, we start off with the year, make, and model of the car, and then we talk about the symptoms. So I have this car, and I've got a vibration. Or I have this car, and I have a check engine light, and here's the code. I have this car, and it won't shift out of first gear. Those are the kinds of things that we're really good at. But the process is better suited for us to help you rather than tell us what the three-whisker kid at the auto parts store told you to buy. Because he's guessing, and I think you would appreciate the fact that most of us are not going to guess. We're going to find the real problem. Jeremy, Bob, and Ellen Frisbee. Jeremy, which is their family?
Son-in-law.
Son-in-law, okay. Sure. And Jeremy is really good tech. I want to explain to me the ASC Master stuff. What's it called when you have all the tests?
Well, I don't know that anybody has all the tests because they have, and they keep adding tests. But when you have, and they call it A1 through A8, and that's the master. You're aware of that. Mm-hmm. Then they have the L1, which is the advanced level. And then they've got other advanced levels, the L2, which is an advanced diesel. They have the X1, which is an undercar specialist. But I don't have all the tests they have because there's natural gas and school bus.
Yeah. Paint and body, all that stuff.
Right. So, you know, when we were on last time, you asked how many ASC Masters were in the U.S., I believe it was. And I did get an answer for you. There's 20,000 ASE Masters that have the L1.
That's eight automotive and truck, and then plus the L1,
plus
which
the
is advanced,
level.
And that's advanced diagnostics and all that kind of stuff.
Correct.
Performance.
Right. So as far as what I have, they told me we don't know, the extent of in the U.S. who has all those because it just ranges, but it is probably somewhat less than the 20,000. But it is a difference on what you do too. You know, obviously I don't get into the paint and body stuff, but they're real nice at the ASE, and you talk to them and they say, hey, we try to get a good, you know, look at the U.S., but we don't have, you know, individual stats for all that. So they did do their best for me, but they said, no, we couldn't tell you how many other people in the U.S. have the certifications that you do, but they did give me the other stats, so.
And I think what it boils down to is I have a bachelor's in automotive repair, master's plus the L1. You have a doctorate because you're many levels above us masters. You've already passed L2 and the X and some of those other ones that we haven't done. So I've never seen anybody go past master in L1. So you have tests that I've never taken.
Well, they're similar to a degree. You know, you go from the L1, just think of that on the diesel level. You know, you have the L2, which just goes above and beyond. And, you know, a lot of the questions that you have in these specialty categories, the advanced level tests, you know, they piggyback off of the basic test, too. You know, they just go a little bit further on certain areas. And one thing they are going to be coming out with that you might see soon is this, they call it the ADOS. And that's the advanced driver assistance protocols that are the cameras, the radar, the automatic braking, and they're putting together those systems to have a certification test soon on that system.
There's no way they're going to have. I mean, this is going to be the baby level because there's nobody that knows all those cars.
Well, they're pulling their hair out trying to figure out how to test, you know, to create that type of, I was in that meeting when they were trying to get some answers on how to pull all those things together to form a test.
How are you going to do that? There's nobody that really, and then each car's different.
Right.
Some cars shake the steering wheel when you leave your lane. Some cars throw up a red warning light. Some cars will bring you back into the lane. So you've got all these dynamics going on, but you and I both know it's all voltage stuff.
Well, the difference that I'm seeing now is with the cameras and the use of cameras to kind of go with all these other systems, the cameras with the radar, you know, the cameras with the sonar, that they all integrate together, and then you have all these like targets to align these cameras, and if they get into an accident and these cameras get misaligned, nothing seems to work right. You've got all these problems. They're all networked into the main computer, so there's a lot more going on than used to be with these new systems.
Yeah, wait until you go in and do trunk work and you get that rear camera all screwed up. Then what about that Chevrolet that can see through the trailer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I honestly don't know how they're doing all that.
It's a remote camera on the back of the trailer. That's what I'm told. I haven't seen it myself. So, no, it's going to be different, but it's all going to be electronics. And we've already been through that when we went to mixture control solenoids on carburetors and we worked ourselves into fuel injection and how many different levels of fuel injection are there now, yeah. Sequential, port fuel, throttle body, all that stuff. So when you talk about the tests, they're kind of focused. And once you take, and now, can you name all eight that include a master, that are included in a master?
Oh, sure.
Okay, go.
Okay. You got the brakes. I believe that's A1.
Forget the A. Just
okay.
Give me the
You got the brakes, the suspension, the manual transaxle, the automatic transmission, the engine mechanical, the engine performance, AC, and electrical.
Okay. I never remember all of them. But when you get to be my age, after so many years of being master, then you're a master emeritus. I had to look up the word emeritus, but you're retired, they say. But you don't have to take the test anymore. That's really the bottom line. So if you have the fundamentals, then you should be able to follow through, and that's been important for us.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to talk to the Hitler of the lobby, and Ellen is the one that's spraying everybody down, taking them to the car wash next door and spraying Lysol all over them.
I have cleaned more cars this couple weeks than I think I've done in a life. Well, no, we clean our own cars most of the time, too. So, but no, we are taking all the precautions with what's going on with that virus. We're trying to be as safe for them as for ourselves.
And this is something we've never been before.
No.
I mean, we've had measles things, and we've had coughs and colds. We've never had anything like this at all.
No.
So I noticed that in the advertisement mode, everybody's talking about, we're trying to keep you and us okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the you is fine. The us is just as important.
Exactly. And we want our customers to know, because they need transportation, and we're one of the businesses that have to be open. People have to get to the doctors. People have to get to the drugstore or groceries. So we're there if they need it, but we want our customers to know, and I'm sure you're the same way, that we are doing all the precautions that we need to do to keep them safe and us safe too.
Yeah.
So we can all get through this.
And Bob, what are you doing today? Are you wiping down steering wheels, or are you working in the shop, or are you just kind of saying to yourself, I never been here before?
I'm trying to stick to the computer and pricing coordinating things.
Okay. So. It's the same way with us. We've got quite a few people on the front end, and that's taken up a lot. So what happens if they come in with three kids and they want to go for a test drive? That creates a problem.
Yeah.
So you're always fluttering this around. Then if the car comes in and they want to wait for it, then you have to somehow make you contain them.
We have a small office, so we can't, and we tell our customers before they walk through our door, we're sorry, it's for your safety and ours. You have to stand, you know, a distance apart. And we clean keys, we do everything, we talk to them, and I've not met anybody that wasn't thankful that we're doing that.
A couple of guys have been putting those wooden picnic tables, because they don't have a lobby of any size.
Yeah.
The problem is you can't put people on either side of the picnic tables because they're too close.
Right.
So you can only have, I mean, if one couple sits at one, that's it.
Yeah.
So how many of you? Another thing that we've been doing is we've been parking all of our employees' cars out in front. we keep our front doors open and our gates are open. So people know we're open because the big thing we find, and you probably hear it as well, I didn't know you were open. I didn't think you'd be open.
We did the same thing. We parked our cars, but also on my message, we sent, I changed my voice message on my phone stating, we are open, we are here for you, we're doing all the precautionary things, and we're here to help you if you need. Plus, we sent out email. We emailed over 1,000 of our customers with a note saying, we're open, we're here for you, we're doing all it. So it's pretty detailed. So to let people know, we'll help you.
We're not seeing a lot of new customers, where before we get a couple a week. So we're not seeing the new ones. But there's a lot of cars that we've bid before this calamity started that we've not seen those repairs. And I think people are just, they're more interested in buying toilet paper.
Have toilet paper.
But we're rationing it in the bathrooms to just one roll at a time. So we're
How many squares do you want?
There was somebody on the internet that figured out how many squares you got and how many, and you have to go to the bathroom 200 times a day in order to use up one roll of toilet paper and all that kind of stuff. So there's lots of jokes in there worth telling, but this is a car show. So, Ellen, that's the last time we're going to talk to you. 38th Avenue and Indian School is Harker's Automotive. Bob and Ellen and Jeremy all come from there. I'm proud that they're part of our best car repair shops, because there's been a couple of times that Jeremy and Bob have pulled rabbits out of their hats. So I've sent them a car that nobody else can fix. And it's the same old, I've taken it to everybody in town, I've spent $1,000 and nobody can fix it. And so I tell them that Bob has a magic wand.
It's called Jeremy.
Yeah. And that creates a good thing. I want to tell you about a magic wand real quick. I had a problem with the bank, and I just couldn't get it answered here. So I called a couple people, and they said, we're going to send you to the home office in Des Moines. So I get a hold of, this guy calls me back, and he works for the Big Cheese. He's on the 19th floor. And I tell him what the situation is. It has to do with a trust in an estate that I'm the administrator of. So he calls me back in 24 hours, and he says, this is what happened. And it was a perfectly reasonable explanation. And I said, I've been working 30 days to try to get this. It involved a check that was sent to us. We cashed, and then they stopped payment on it. But in reality, it was part of an escrow of a house we sold, and that check should have gone to the buyer and not the seller.
Mm.
Reasonable explanation. Mm. I'm with it. So I really liked how he helped me. So I sent him a fireman's hat and a magic wand. And the magic wand is about 16 inches long. When you push the button, it goes like that, and on the end of it is a purple light. So I thought about security. This building's got to have security. So when they look at the x-ray, they're going to see these two little batteries and this long stick. So I put on the outside of it, I said, my name's Mark Salem. Here's my cell phone number. This goes to Jim, and this is why, and he'll know what I'm sending him a present. So he calls me back, and he goes, first of all, from the security level on the bottom floor, everybody in the building knows that I now have a magic wand. And he says, and my boss comes in and says, if you got the wand, I got a problem. And he says, and so everybody wants to borrow it. So I said, well, I'll send you the link on Amazon that you can buy them. And so I guess he bought a bunch of them to hand out. And so we also have them at our front counter for the person that comes in and says, you know, I've got all these problems. My car hiccups and every once in a while passes gas, and then it's sick, and then it runs fine, and the air conditioning comes on and off. If they're a good customer and I can get away with it, I'll take the magic wand outside and I'll say, I got this. Just wave it over the car and be done with it. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We got fine. You're welcome to join us. Back, everybody. Mark Salem, along with Bob and Ellen Frisbee and Jeremy, their son-in-law from Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. How many years you been in business?
52?
No. Well, I mean, we've owned it. Yeah, you've been there 52 years, but we've owned it over 30. 30 okay. years, going to 31.
How long have you guys been married?
We're going to be 50 years this month, next
okay.
month.
Yeah, very few of our friends have hit that point. We're kind of in the top end. We're at 46 in February, but very few of our friends have. And then we've not been in business as long as you guys have, or as long as you have, Bob. And I can tell by the color of your hair, too. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. They've been open since 1970. Brian and Thelma both come from families that have been in the gas station business that dates back to the late 50s and early 60s. So they've been around a long time. Thompson's Auto Repair has ASE-certified technicians. They do a great job. They understand that there's a diagnostic process, an estimate process, an authorization process. They understand all of that. But the most important part of that process, they do well. Let me drive the car to make sure what I intended to fix, I really did fix. It's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you. So let me tell you that they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and it's a really good place to go. Good morning to you, Harvey. How can we help you?
Good morning. I'm not a car guy, and here's my issue. We were up in Pine Top for Thanksgiving, came home, dead battery, had to have it charged. We got home. The car ran fine for about a month, came out right after Christmas, dead battery. AAA came in, put in a brand new battery. A week later, same thing, car was dead. The people that serviced my car are Raintree Auto. I had it taken to them. They thought one of the cells in the battery could have been damaged, so AAA put in another new battery. They put in another new alternator, and everything was fine for a couple months, and I'm back to the, I need to jumpstart that car every couple of days.
Your circle of happiness is one that I hear all the time, and the players don't change. It's that way. It's finger-pointing. Nobody knows what they're doing. There's no way in God's green earth that that AAA guy can tell you that your battery is good, because you can't test a dead battery because they all fail. So you have to charge them up.
A brand new one.
It doesn't make any difference. How did he come to the conclusion that you had a bad one?
I have no idea. Okay. As I said, I know where the gas cap is.
Okay.
My knowledge as far as auto mode.
Let's talk about common sense, though.
Okay.
Common sense is he doesn't, I'm telling you, he doesn't have the equipment, and we need a fully charged battery in order to test it.
Okay.
So then, now you got a shop that says, I think we've got a dead cell in it, so they do a second battery, and you still have the problem.
Correct.
So you haven't made any progress.
Oh,
and a new alternator?
Yes.
And you're still dying?
Yes.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 2008 Denali, GMC Denali, and it only has a little over 80,000 miles on it.
Jeremy?
Well, it's a problem that comes across a lot with batteries that go dead, and then they seem to be fixed, all the, you know, with nothing being done to them. And we get them all the time where you could have something drawing the battery down that comes and goes, and it can be a number of different, you know, components in the vehicle. A lot of times when you take it to a shop, what they're going to do is kind of play the odds. Yeah, maybe you had a bad battery, and it, you know, if this was the first time and then it didn't do it again, they would have guessed right. But it sounds like maybe that's what they did with the alternator too. But with a draw, something is pulling the, you know, electrical charge of that battery when the car's shut off. And it sounds like it's, you know, you said a month at a time, or maybe weeks at a time, it's coming and going.
Yeah.
Those are probably one of the hardest ones to pin down, because you can test it, and, you know, we have equipment where you can see down to the microamp draw that comes out of a battery, and we can see exactly how much comes out with what would cause a dead battery. The problem is, if we test it every single day for a week and there's no draw, it's going to be really hard to find out what component's staying on. You could have, you know, amplifiers and radios and stuff like that that don't turn off, and then it just stays on longer than it should, or a computer that doesn't shut down. But it's, you know, tracing those down can be one of the hardest things to find, and especially when they're stretched out. You know, you said it happened a month prior, or I don't know what that, you know, it sounds like it's getting worse to me, like it's getting, you know, quicker and quicker. But I know we've personally had customers that say, hey, it's dead. I've done a complete electrical test on it. There's absolutely no draw. We keep it overnight. No draw. We keep it another night. We test it, keep a recordable meter on it so we can say, hey, did something power up, you know, when it's off? And unfortunately, until that, unless there's something that actually acts up, it is really tough to, you know, figure out what is causing it.
I've left the vehicle with them for 3, 4, 5 days at a time. the good news is we have something else to drive, so it's not that necessary that we have two vehicles. And, I'm at a loss because we would like to have two vehicles that run.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things. Jeremy's right. We can't tell you what's wrong with it because there's too many options on the table.
Okay.
It's a hard thing to do. Jeremy, one of the things that we do is we hook a voltmeter into the cigarette lighter and have them go buy one at Harbor Freight, and then they monitor the voltage when they park it. And under the best of conditions, we're going to find some kind of similarity there. A long drive before, wipers and headlights afterwards, whatever. But Jeremy's right. This thing could have some kind of a navigation module. It can be OnStar that's clicking in and clicking out. There's all kinds of things on the electronic part. And one of them is what you can do is do different things. Don't use your radio. Just drive the car. Don't use air conditioning. Don't use lights. Don't do anything but just drive the car.
Well, what I've done, Mark, is when I've driven the car, I have now manually, I turn off the radio and I turn off the air conditioning before I turn the car off.
Okay. Well, that's not going to do anything. Because, see, we have a computer that we have keep alive memory in it. So okay. The computer has to remember your seat settings, your steering wheel settings, your radio settings, your clock. It has to remember all that. And so that guy, if it's awake, then the question is why is it awake? And I know not so long ago we fixed one of these after a month of messing with it. The stereo had just been installed. Someone forgot to tell us that.
Yeah.
And we've got a stereo system that's hooked to a feed, and that's the draw we're looking for. And it's got an amp in it.
And they'll keep the network awake. Sometimes those aftermarket radios or any aftermarket equipment, like one of the first steps is usually disconnect everything that's been installed and see if the problem goes away.
That's another thing you can do. You can pull a fuse one at a time, and that's kind of long, but sometimes you just pull a fuse one at a time. You have to know what the fuse does and pull the fuse one at a time and see if that makes any difference with respect to the voltmeter that's plugged into the cigarette lighter. That's the best we can do, Harvey. 602-508-0960.
2006 XLP, the Hemi engine. And the mechanic told me I need to replace the spark plug every 30,000 or 50,000 miles, something like that. And I've been driving it now for over 100,000 miles, and it runs great. What's the deal?
Jeremy, you want to take this one?
Okay. And the Hemi engine, I believe there's two plugs per cylinder on that one. So I know they're a little more expensive, but all the car manufacturers use different style spark plugs. Some of them use, they call it the iridium metal that seems to last long. And I don't know why, even with the Hemis, they all seem to use the basic spark plug. And they do wear, I know they do recommend those being replaced every 30,000. And if you pull one out and you see that thing is worn, you will understand that there's a gap that spark has to jump, and as the plug wears, it may still jump the gap fine because all those plugs, I think every two has a coil for it, so they have a lot of power to push that spark, but it does increase the load that goes onto those ignition coils.
Well, he's not going to know the gap difference until he has a new one in his hand. So
right.
If he wants to do it himself, then you get a set of new ones, pull out one. If the gap on one is the Grand Canyon and the gap on the other one is 30 pieces of paper, then you're home free. It's not uncommon for people to go 100,000 miles. It's going to run a little better when he puts plugs in it.
Well, he may not even, that's one thing that you can see, but you may not feel. Like if it's not misfiring, it's still pushing the spark. It's just it is a wear factor that, like you said, you don't think it runs any different. You're probably not going to see any difference. Nine times out of ten, you probably won't notice it because.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Would changing the style of plug for one of those long-lasting iridium plugs be effective in this kind of engine, or do you have to go with the standard deal?
I think you should go to the auto parts store and get one of those really fancy spark plugs that has four sparks instead of just one, and it has four or five different tangs, and that's what I think you ought to get. Those are made by guys at NASA, and those are the very best you can get, never mind they're $30 a piece. Here, I'm going to answer that question. The spark plugs are typically going to be made by one or two companies. They're just going to put different brands on them. NGK might be different. Champion might be different. Motorcraft might be different. But when you start getting into those iridium and the platinums and you get all those are a derivative of somebody else's spark plug with a different name on them. So I'm not a real fan of going by name. I'm not going to buy the cheapest plugs. I'm not going to buy the most expensive. But for my customers, I'm going to find the middle with the name I can identify with.
Yeah.
So it won't damage the engine if I put in considered a long-lasting plug?
Well, you're not going to damage the engine unless the plug is cheap and it comes apart inside the cylinder and the ceramic gets spread all over there. So no, the answer to your question is no.
Okay, great. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, hold, Jeremy?
Yeah, I was going to agree. You can put a longer-lasting plug if you like that would wear a little bit longer. Yeah, that'd be fine, too.
The spark plug has all of them have a polarity issue, and they have the center electrode sends metal to the upper electrode and back and forth. That's how come we get the round tip. But in your particular case, I agree with Jeremy. Just go around and take your old spark plug and say, go into a couple auto parts store and say, here, cross this over by application and the plug number and tell me what you've got and how much it is. And then you can go on the internet and just say reviews on NGK for Hemis. You can find all kinds of people that are going to tell you half of them like it and half of them don't. We got to go to Tom number two. Tom, good morning.
Yeah, I just want to let you know I'm the real Tom.
Oh, okay. I see you didn't tell Gil that, so I didn't know to pull you in first. Gosh, I'm sorry.
I have a question on the air conditioning on the front of the compressor. It's got an idler. It turns all the time on bearings, you know, whether the compressor is turned on, energized, or not.
Yes.
If the compressor, quote, fails internally, will that also cause that idler to seize up, or are they going to run independently?
What kind of vehicle is this?
It's a 1996 Explorer, and I think it's got 120,000 on it.
Okay, so yours, it's got a magnetic clutch on the front of that compressor. So it clicks on and off when it engages the compressor. So the idler pulley can fail independent of the compressor part of it. If the idler fails, though, that would lock everything up, and then you'd be in trouble.
It throws the belt off.
Right. If the compressor locks up, depending on how badly, we have seen them kind of, you know, melt that clutch off, but if the compressor locks and it can't engage, you should still be able to drive it if the rest of the pulley is okay.
And you got two choices when you go to the auto parts store. You're going to get the compressor or you're going to get the whole thing. So this is not an issue of what failed. If the compressor locked up and your idler pulley continues to move, the idler pulley and the magnetic clutch are working like they should. If you turn on the air conditioning and all of a sudden the belt starts squealing and all that kind of stuff, then that's normally the idler bearing or the compressor. So it's kind of difficult at this particular point until you do more work to determine whether the idler pulley came apart or locked up or whatever. But if the idler pulley locked up, it had burned the belt off by now.
And you never want to just put a compressor on if you have a locked up compressor. That's there's reasons for that you need to check into, you know, what was the cause of that. And then when compressors lock up also, they can filter the system with debris that must be removed and flushed out before you can you know, get a new component on there. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, cause a headache for yourself later on.
Well, this goes back to Bob when you and I were kids, and we had the A6 and the R4, and they didn't have screens on the pressure and suction side, but today most all of them have screens. So when you take your compressor in for a warranty and the screen's filled with metal, they're not going to warranty that thing because you didn't get the metal out of there, and all you did is move it from this high line to the low line, and it was already past the orifice tube. So You've got a tough way to go here, but I think our suggestion is buy the whole compressor. Yeah. Buy it with the nose and the clutch on it. And then make sure that you do something to get the metal out of there, especially if you look in the back of the compressor and either one of those two orifices, after you pull the manifold off, has metal in it, then you're in big trouble. So I got to run, but thank you, Tom, the only Tom. And 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we're waiting for you. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock in the morning. My name's Mark Salem. The lines are open. Well, actually, we've got Bob, but we've got four lines open, 602-508-0960. Plus, we got another hour after this one. But if you want to get in, now's the time. Four lines are open, and Gil's answering the phone. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate has been around diesels all of his life. Nate is like 9 feet tall, and he has tennis rackets for hands. But he's the nicest guy in the whole wide world. If you're a diehard diesel guy and you need service and repair or parts, but specifically someone to track down components that are defective or fix your Ford, of course, you need your towing insurance for the Ford anyway, then they work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And trust me when I tell you, he's a great diesel guy. I've even used him before when we ran across a diesel that we didn't have a clue on. Nate was able to tell us. So that's Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I want to talk real quick about Larry Harker's Auto, who's here today with me, Bob and Ellen and Jeremy. But they're talking about a letter that they sent to customers. This is the nicest one I've seen.
Thank you.
Larry Harker Auto Repair is open and ready to serve you during these difficult times. Our staff has intensified our cleaning program. We've made sure that we clean the toilet seat on the ladies' bathroom. I threw that in. We're offering shuttle service to you. Currently, we're cleaning all the customers' point of entry into our facility multiple times a day, which includes sanitizing the customer checkout area, the credit card machine, the waiting room chairs, customers' keys, vehicle steering wheels, shifter knobs, and turn signals. I like the list.
Thank you. I really
like the list. Our technicians are also wearing protective gloves inside your vehicle as an additional precaution. I like how you were specific because you've got two or three things that I would have never thought of.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to put this right here so we can copy it. And Bob, you're up next. How can we help you?
Morning, guys. My son has a 2014 GMC 5.3, you know, with the cylinder deactivation where it goes from 4, you know, and my son has 90,000. He hasn't had any problems, but I see a lot of people on the internet, they disable it and things because they say they have a lot of problems. And I change the oil when he gets to 30%, you know, oil life with 0W20. I use like a top quality full synthetic.
Okay. So how often are you doing those?
Well, I let the oil, when it says 30%, you know, on the oil life monitor, 30% left. So I do it, you know, a little sooner.
All right. Well, how many miles? How many miles?
That's about 5,000 miles.
Okay. Okay. So I think he's talking about cylinder select.
Yep.
Okay.
And they are a little more detrimental to dirty oil just because the way that they turn those cylinders on and off is through the lifter, which is oil actuated. So when you get a lot of junk in the oil. So yeah, I say that it's good that you're changing. Most of the problems we see with those lifters, is really hard to, you know, I've cut a number of those lifters open trying to see what goes wrong to see why they stop working. But the bad news is it's not just the cylinder deactivation portion that, can cause you problems. So yeah, if you've kept up on your oil changes, I think that's probably as good as you can do. I wouldn't get too carried away with trying to deactivate any of it and,
Well, there, Mr. Google on the internet will teach you 47 different ways to deactivate that with switches on the brake lights and all this other kind of stuff. Everybody's worried about the car starting and all that other kind of stuff, but the starter looks like a jet engine starter compared to a Toyota. So there's a big difference. But I'm going to take the other side of your issue. The synthetic oils pour longer. They hold more trash. They have a higher pour point. Or lower pour point, otherwise at 60 below zero, they flow, unlike any other oil. And then they turn to a carbon or solid at 300 degrees, and they have more dirt and suspension than other oils. So in this particular case, let me just make a suggestion. You don't need synthetic oil for your 5,000-mile oil change. You're wasting a lot of money. So I'd go to a blended oil that has a 5,000-mile interchange in it. And if you get a name brand, then it's going to be okay because some of them have a 90-10 blend, a 90 conventional and a 10% synthetic. But most of the major brands are playing it like they should, and it's 50-50. So I think you'd save some money, and I think that would do you better. Conventional is good to 3, maybe 3 to 5, and semi-synthetic from 5 to 7,500, and then synthetic goes up from there. But Jeremy, if we're going to protect your engine to 5,500 degree Fahrenheit, I think it's kind of cooked at 300 or less.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense for us to... Remember the mobile commercials where they put the oil in the frying pan and they put 500 degrees to it? The fact of the matter is the motor's not going to ever get past 260, 280, 300 before it locks up.
Before it stops moving and you're... It's a...
You need a tow truck. Yeah. It's a mute point about your oil. But... I'm not quite sure I disconnected. I agree with Jeremy on that. I agree that lifters are a problem, and I agree that people don't change their oil on a regular basis. My only suggestion is just go to a semi-synthetic. You're still in the 5,000-mile range, and I don't really like the oil monitors because we're not privy to how they do that or the parameters on that, and I can see where that might be kind of self-serving. So if we move the parameters up, and we don't know what the parameters are, and it has to do with cold start, hot start, how long it ran, what RPM, what speed, what the temperature is in the ambient, what the temperature is with the oil, all of that has everything to do with that monitor.
Right.
So I don't know that I trust that. I'd rather go by mileage. But thank you, Bob. That brings up a good point of discussion. And we've got another caller.
Say hello to Lee.
Lee, good morning to you. How can we help you?
You have talked a number of times about the fuel and the premium. I drive a Lexus, and they premium gas. And you've said buy the cheapest, and I agree with that. There's a huge difference in the prices now. But when you say the cheapest, is that leaded or unleaded?
Well, you can't put leaded. And I don't think we have a leaded anymore.
No, there's no leaded.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is there's sometimes three different levels of gasoline, just gasoline, and then we have some fancy gasoline, and then we have premium. But most of the time it's just unleaded and super premium or whatever.
Yes.
I think what you're alluding to is, in a way that you can understand, everybody can understand, it's the how many milliseconds of flame we have. How many milliseconds of explosion we have. So regular is like popping a balloon. It's just that. But if you blow up the balloon and you just let it go all over the room, that's premium. So regular, one molecule ignites 10,000, and 10,000 ignite a million. So the burn time is short. In an exaggerated way, super, one ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six, so the burn's a lot longer. What I've said before is that we've owned blown Jaguars. We've had a lot of high-performance cars. I have a Camaro with a blower on it right now, and I'll run regular in it a whole bunch because the knock sensor will take care of the timing. It's not going to hurt my motor. And the difference between the two might be 5 gallons of additive to a 9,000-gallon tank. So I suggest that you don't get much of that 5 gallons of gas when we mix it with 9,000 gallons of gasoline on the truck. So I have experience in all that. So that's just what I do. You're welcome to do what you want. But I'll tell you what, if you have your wife fill it up and you drive it and you had a 50-50 chance of guessing right on whether you can tell her whether or not it was done, which one it is. But I'll bet neither one of you can tell the difference between super unleaded and unleaded.
Okay, so when you say regular, from the low end or the cheaper end, what octane are we talking there?
What is it, 86, 87? 87.
Yeah, 87 is your regular, and I think it's 89 and then 91. And those octane ratings, like Mark was saying, are just their resistance to knock of that flame front. So that it, if yeah, you were to have
but a ping. But it would just give me then... in my mind, I just look and say, okay, regular 87, that's the low end of the three.
In the octane rating, correct. That's going to be the cheapest.
But here's the deal. Your motor's not going to love you more. There's no science that says you're going to make your motor's going to last longer. If the engine's ability to see knock and retard the timing isn't there, then there's a good chance if you ignore that for a long period of time, a good chance that your motor's going to scream. But I've never replaced an engine because somebody used regular instead of super unleaded. So, and I don't do that myself. I use the cheapest gas I can find. My wife can't tell the difference when she had a Jaguar with a blower on it. She couldn't tell the difference between regular and super. So you have all three of them. Just do the blind taste test. Just you fill it up, see if your wife can make it see the difference, and then she fills it up and doesn't tell you what it is. Try that. So.
And I just got in on the tail end of the call ahead of me, and for just oil, for what do you recommend on basic oil, just on the oil changes, rather than the different grades they have there?
Well, it depends on the grades. A conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000 miles, and a semi-synthetic is 5,000 to 7,500, and a synthetic is 7,500 upwards to 10 and 12. So it really depends on how bad your car leaks, and it really depends what year it is, and it really depends on what the owner's manual calls for. So, what year is your Lexus?
06.
Okay.
How many miles are on it?
96,000.
Yeah, we've been telling people to base it on how fast you're putting the miles on. If you're putting a lot of miles on really quick, then we suggest to go into full synthetic. If you're putting very few miles on the car, then go to the regular or we blend. Use the blend. Almost all of ours are blend now.
And we do, too. Here's a good example. We're across the street from Mountain Park Ranch in Ahwatukee. We got a lot of ladies that go to the liquor store three times a year, and I'm making fun, okay? So why would I put them in a synthetic when they're 3,000 miles a year? I'll put them in conventional and bring them in April.
Yeah.
So in my world, I've chosen those people that are 3,000 miles a year. I'm doing it in April, so they go through the summer with fresh oil. And I'm only somebody that drives 5 to 7,500, I'm putting a blend. And somebody who runs 12 or 15, I'm putting in a synthetic.
And some of the vehicles, don't they require to do the full synthetic? You can't because it's too thin.
Here's the problem. I've been involved in oil for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a sample to the lab, no one can tell you what it is.
Really?
Yeah. So it's not like they're going to say that Shell, because there's only four companies that pull oil out of the ground and make oil.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Shell, you got Mobil, you got Exxon, and Chevron. Those four companies make oil for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a bottle of Motorcraft, but there's no such thing as Motorcraft oil. That's oil from one of those guys put in a Motorcraft can. So it's... These are all little idiosyncrasies, mm-hmm. but, it doesn't really make any difference. It doesn't make any difference to me. We have 600 gallons of oil, and it's all Chevron just because right now.
But doesn't it tell you some of the cars require? I mean,
you're going by the weight.
Start
looking at 0.20 or 0.10 weight oil.
Yeah, or 0.00. We're right around the corner from.
1 minute.
It's, you're right. Some of the cars actually call for a specific weight.
Right.
But. The problem with that is the driving habits and the temperature and the environment mm-hmm. and the climate have such a big thing to do, and they can't possibly draw those squares and say, okay, if you live in North Dakota, this is what you use, and if you live in Arizona. So it's a difficult thing. So if follow your owner's manual.
Right.
But we just told them to follow their owner's manual, but Mark just told them to ignore the super unleaded number. And so there's a little bit of that.
I have the 06 Lexus, and I'm due for an oil change. If I ask for a blend, I drive about 5,000 miles a year. So if I ask for a blend, it's synthetic and something?
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. It's some portion of synthetic and some portion of conventional. Most of the blended oils are pretty doggone good. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Well, good morning, everybody. Let me turn Bob on. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Jeremy and Ellen and Bob all together work at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I put them in the top 3% to 5% of all the shops in the valley with respect to diagnostics. They have the uncanny ability to find the dead squirrel in the dashboard from a stink that nobody else could find. I think there was a BMW that you guys did that had been bid for a huge amount of money because water was coming out of the vents, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So without saying the name of it, Bob, what kind of, without saying the name of the any other shop, mm-hmm. what kind of car was it?
That was a BMW.
Okay. Yeah, and the BMW. Estimate number that had been given by another shop was?
If I remember right, it was $1,500 range.
It was a lot.
It was a heater core.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they required a heater core.
Yeah. It was a plug drain. On the
well,
but
no.
That's the end of the story.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's the end of
that's
the story.
That's what they told him it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So the heater core is underneath the dash behind the glove box, and when it leaks coolant.
Well, when they build the BMW, they start with the heater core, and then they put all the components around it as they build this car. So everything has to come off it.
You're going after the heater core.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell the story Bob tells me, okay? He says you guys get it in there, and it's throwing water out of the vents. You check the drain, and the drain doesn't drain. I don't know if you stuck a hanger up there. You know what I'd have done? I would have stuck a gasoline-powered blower over the vents, taped them all off, and blown that trash out. But that's what happened, is the condensation drain from the evaporator case that contains not only the heater core, but the evaporator, which is the thing that gets really cold, it blows air at you. The evaporator sweats.
Right.
And so you cleaned the drain out, and the car was fixed. How much did that cost? Do you remember? Either one of you? Any of you?
No, I don't remember.
$100 or less.
$100 or less.
Yeah.
So the idea is when you folks park your car in the summertime and you come out and there's water by the right front wheel inside just a tad, that's usually sweat from the air conditioning system. And the evaporator, again, is the cold thing behind the glove box. We put a fan behind it. We turn on the fan. The air goes across the cold thing like a big ice cube and blows cold air in your head. That's kind of how it works. Richard, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I've got a 2005 GMC Sierra with a 5.3 V8.
Okay.
And 218,000 miles on it. And my airbag light came on about a month ago, and I can't figure out how to get it off. I tried looking at fuses and stuff.
Okay.
Everything seems to be okay.
We can only guess. Jeremy, you want to throw
sure.
a guess out?
Well, the best guess would be something's wrong in the system that's setting a code that is going to kind of direct the next move. And so if the airbag light is on, that means that system is disabled. Your airbag's not going to work.
I see.
It has a module, just like all the other major components, that records mm-hmm. what fault is in it. And unfortunately with airbags, there's impact sensors. You've got a airbag, the actual bags themselves, and you got one in the steering, you got one in the dash. Some have a lot more than others, but you also have these impact sensors in the doors and in the frame, and all those have to work continuously so that the computer monitors all the signals all the time. So if that airbag, shorts or opens or something, it'll click a code. And a lot of times, even if that symptom goes away, that code has to, the computer has to see no problem in the system for a number of drive cycles. It's like 40 different times. So you're probably not going to get very far pulling fuses. That might do a reset of the module, but until you get a little bit more in depth, it'd be pretty tough to say exactly what it is.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Richard. I'll bet you an oil change, it's a clock spring.
It's a what?
A clock spring. See, we have to keep contact with all the wiring harness with the steering wheel, and the steering wheel moves.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this little spring underneath the steering wheel, and it allows the steering wheel to move. One end will move with the steering wheel, and the other end is fixed. 218,000 miles. You've been around the world 8 times. How many times has your wife driven that truck?
Oh, I'm not married.
Oh, how about, let me change the question. How many times your girlfriend drove that truck?
Well, she doesn't like my truck. It's too dirty.
Okay. All right. And just tell her that she needs to buy a Lexus so you can ride with her with your cowboy boots and spurs on. Okay? This isn't a tough one if the light's on, and if it has to do, the computer code will say something to the effect of is the module's lost sight of the airbag in the steering wheel.
I see.
And you pull the steering wheel off, you replace the clock spring, Jeremy, an hour or two? $100 to $200 for the labor. I don't know, the clock spring can be cheap, and it also can be $150. But that's the area. I'm going to guess. I don't want you to go to your garage and say Salem said to replace the clock spring.
I won't say that.
Okay. just say, Jeremy from Larry Harper's Auto said to replace this clock spring, and then that's how we'll go.
We will test it first before. We're not going to throw. We have those customers come in that want us to throw a part at it. We're going to test it first.
You're absolutely right. Okay. But he understands we're just talking about possibilities.
Right.
We had somebody in a Chrysler put a clock spring in the other day, and there's a specific process. Well, they didn't do it. The lady drives away. She gets to a hospital. She makes a hard right turn. The airbag pops and blows her head into the B pillar.
Oh my God.
It gets kind of ugly from there. Mm-hmm. So if this is a dealership that installed this part but didn't center the steering wheel on the spring. So you should have two turns to the right, two turns to the left. Well, when she went two turns to the left to park, it stretched and it touched the squibs, they call it. It's the little tape connector with wires in it, and it popped the airbag. So I'm betting the only reason I'm betting the clock spring is because of 218,000 miles. That's why I'm saying that. There's nothing else that wears on your airbag system, but there could be a bad connection, like Jeremy said, so you'd have to track them some of that down, but that's my bet, okay?
All right, well, thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
You bet. I know he won't replace the clock spring, because once you get the steering wheel apart and you realize you got all these pieces, usually you're a little chicken to put it all back together.
Yep.
All righty. Who's next, Gil?
That would be Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Good morning there, Mark. I called you a month or two ago, and you never really let me get my problem out that I want, or the question out that I wanted to ask.
Okay.
I had likened the way my 2001 F-250 diesel handles, and I mentioned that it is like it has not enough tow in. In other words, it wanders. I'm not saying that it's a towing issue. I'm certain it is not.
Okay, I remember the phone call, but see, what you're talking about is a discussion you want to have, and you start off with something that's wrong. Because tow in doesn't cause the car to wander. Tow out causes the car to wander, but not tow in. And I also remember telling you that if you had too much tow in, you'd have excessive wear on the outside of the tires, and if you had too much tow out, you'd have excessive wear from the inside of the tires. And I remember you told me you didn't have any wear. And so all I can do is guess. Jeremy, if it wanders, other than a loose suspension, which should come with a noise, a clunk, what else could it be?
Well, on F-250s particularly, they have kind of a weak link, and it's usually in the gear, the steering gear itself. They've got really heavy, you know, linkage rods that tend to hold up pretty well. Obviously there's a lot of possibilities for that, a loose steering, but I know we've had multiple times where the gears get loose themselves, and that it's not going to wear tires, because what you're feeling is a play between the steering wheel and what's actually happened to the wheels on the ground. When you turn the steering wheel, you've got movement before it's actually turning the wheels that you're steering with. So anything in between,
Steve,
can cause that.
Steve, this is how you check it, okay? Start the car, stand outside the car with the window down. Put your hand at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel. Look at the front tires. Wiggle the steering wheel back and forth about the width of a toothpick, and then get bigger and bigger. The steering wheel should move and be completely synchronized with the front tire. Completely. And if it's wandering and you've got play, then you have to figure out where the play's at.
Right.
So that's the best we can do. We can't tell you for sure, but this is, Steve, it's important for us to have give and take. And when it wanders, we're already knowing what we would do to diagnose it. And throw it on an alignment rack wouldn't be the first thing we'd do. We wouldn't set the tow, because tire wear is associated with tow. And if you don't have tire wear that matches bad tow, then we're not going to go in that direction. So I think I've given you what you can do yourself to check the connection between the steering wheel and the left front tire, and I think that's the way to go. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to give us a call. We have open lines available, and let me tell you real quick about Blackwell Automotive. Tom at Blackwell Automotive is a no-good son of a gun. He doesn't know how to play poker. He can't hold his liquor, and he's just ornery as all hell, but he does a good job in fixing cars, and he's a friend of mine, as you can well imagine. But I really like it. He's up at 40th Street in Greenwell. I really like it because when I specifically send someone to him, because geographically he is the best shop for them, he usually can pull it off. Not too long ago, a lady had an old Chevy pickup, and she wanted power brakes installed, power steering installed, and air conditioning installed, and she couldn't find anybody to do that. So I called Tom, and I said, I bet you don't want this because I bet you can't do it, which is kind of dragging the cape in front of the bull. And I said, this is what she wants, and I told her I'm not going to be able to find anybody to do that. And he said, just send her my way. In 2 days, he put that truck together. And that lady has sent me a thank you note every 3 days for the last 2 months. She's just real happy with her truck. So Blackwell's good at that kind of stuff, 40th Street and Greenway. And if you tell him you know Mark Salem and Mark's going to send you a coupon for $100 off, then that'll make a smile. We'll be back just right after this. To the hour. Ellen told a really nasty joke, and that's why we're all laughing right now. So, anyway, we're trying to get her microphone on and everything like that. You have no idea what's going on behind the scenes in this place. Let me talk a really good about and really nice about automatic transmission exchange. If you're in Phoenix and you need a transmission diagnosed or to take somebody for a drive, if you can duplicate the problem, nobody can tell you if your transmission is acting up every other Tuesday. It's going to be hard to tell you. But if you can make it happen, saves you lots of money. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a long time. I think Phil actually worked on Fred Flintstone's first car. And so Phil knows what he's talking about. He's, like I said, he's been around a long time. So if you need transmission work and you're in Phoenix, then may I suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange. George, you're up.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing?
Hey, George.
Good,
so,
good.
So, my question to you is, you know, I'm not trying to fix stupidity from the manufacturer, but maybe you can give me some hints. So my wife has a 2010 Toyota RAV4. And a few years ago, Toyota had their wonderful recall. They didn't tell us what they were going to do, so we took it in. And what they did, they took on the rear end for the alignment. I can't remember if it's for the toe-in, toe-out or the camber, but the adjusters back there. So they took out the original ones, they put new ones in, put it on the alignment rack, and then epoxied them. So that's been, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. Well, now we can't adjust the rear end, and obviously things wear out. And so have you heard about Toyota's foolishness? And we're kind of stuck with this, and do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, two things. Toyota's not the only one that welds their front ends together. And that's why they make a die grinder or a torch, because you should be able to get the epoxy off that just like we do. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, because they put a sticker on it that's, you know, so when I take it into an alignment shop, it says do not remove, these are fixed. And so the alignment shop, they're very hesitant about doing anything, because now you're going beyond what the manufacturer is telling you
as
a safety issue, right?
No, yeah. He doesn't have any hair on his chest. He hasn't been around the block. We don't care what they say not to do. If they'd be, you know, let me tell you something. If they built perfect cars, we'd never have a recall. We'd never have a campaign, and we'd never have a technical service bulletins, and our cars would last forever.
That's like Ellen when she says make cookies. She makes cookies.
Yeah.
And she says don't touch them.
Yeah.
That works really good in my house.
And yeah, we mind her. Yeah.
Well, and it's also like the pillows. Do you know the tags on the pillows? They say do not remove.
And the mattress. All that. You know, it says let the car warm up for a minute. Who sits in their driveway for a minute and lets their car warm up? Besides that, the oil guys say that it's much better to drive it at a slow speed with, you know, a minimal amount of load, because that's going to break the oil in and warm it up better. Jeremy, you want to comment on the RAV4?
Oh yeah, I don't think any problem would be, because it's an adjustment to that rear suspension, so they put it where it's supposed to be. When you have things wear, it's going to get out of adjustment again. It's just a matter of how long and whether things wear out as far as bushings go. So even if you were to put new arms on there, you know, that's if those worn out again, you know, they may put more epoxy on. You know, I know some of them do recommend actually welding them on, Once they're set, and that's a pretty rare occasion. Actually, I think I talked to Mark about one of those.
Dodge just did that,
and I wasn't even aware that you would want to do that, but
Dodge just came out and said that.
Yeah, because they if they loosen up, the problem is if those loosen up and they can cause a you know, a steering angle to get out of whack, and that can cause your, you know, driving down the road to you know, get out of control. So that it's all basically just to keep you safe. And they go above and beyond to some degree to make sure that, you know, that nut is tight and that it doesn't back off in any kind of you know, vibration or just driving.
Yeah, George, there's a lot of stuff. George, there's a lot of stuff on the car that we're not supposed to touch. Okay, so the bottom line is if you can't possibly believe that we're going to be able to weld the alignment adjustments and never need to cut them off. Because
so I'm an electrician, and I know that better than that. Right?
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
So don't think you can't take this part to. Now, do you have tire wear problems, or is the back end of the car clear to the left or the right of the front end?
No.
Okay, then leave it alone.
It's just that when they put it on the rack.
Well, who puts it on
the rack? When they put it on the rack, it shows it out of alignment a little bit, but they can't do anything about it. But you guys bring up a good point, and, you know, and if it's, you know. Well, again, it was designed to be adjusted, and then I guess they have some issues with the nut loosening. And to cover CYA, this is their fix, right? Some knee-jerk reaction fix.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. What kind of rack are they putting it on?
That, you know, I'm a...
is it, are the tires dangling? Are the tires dangling, or is it on a runway?
Are they giving you a printout?
I think it does dangle, but I'd have to look. Because I think it's... you know,
okay.
I won't mention their name.
Okay, that's okay. You know. If you lift the car up by the frame and the wheels, we have two kinds of racks. We have a drive-on rack that we lift it up by the tires, and then we have a suspension rack where we pick it up, but the tires are dangling. I promise you, if the parameters were that if the tires don't look good when they're dangling, every single car that comes into my shop would need front-end work. Every single car. Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you, also, there's a lot of cars that don't have that adjustment. And how do you adjust those if it's a solid? There's aftermarket companies that make adjustments for almost every single rod that needs to be adjusted. So even if it's a solid piece that never was supposed to be adjusted, there's times, you know, based on certain circumstances, it will need to be adjusted to get the thing in spec. And so you'll have to put another component, maybe an aftermarket arm. And all that is basically what you're doing by adjusting that.
We do that all the time. We use aftermarket parts all the time. There's Dorman. Dorman takes something like a window motor for a Honda and makes it a whole lot better. So it's
I'm glad I called you guys. And by the way, the guy Tom you talked about, he sounds like me, so I kind of like him.
Well, you know what?
I live in Goodyear,
and
he's way over
there. Tom 1 or Tom 2? Yeah.
I think she's talking about Blackwell.
Oh, okay.
Horrible at poker. I'm horrible at poker. I can't hold my liquor. I'm Asian.
Well,
dang, I know my trade pretty dang good.
And you know
I like them.
That's exactly what Tom. Well, Jeremy and Bob sitting here with me as well. They're just kind of shy because they're on the radio. But the fact of the matter is, thank you for identifying it. When you talk to an electrician and he asks you lots of questions and then says it could be this or this, and then he asks you about symptoms. You know, when you turn on the TV, does the light dim? Does the lights dim in your living room? And does the garbage disposal run at the same speed every time? That's kind of what you got, and that's what we're trying to draw out of people is let's talk about it as opposed to the Google guy that's in St. Louis that's telling you how to fix your car in Arizona. So,
exactly.
So anyway, thank you very much, George. Thank you very much. Dodge right now has this big recall deal, and they've got this adjustment on their front end of their trucks, and they're welding the nuts and the other side to the sleeve.
Right.
Do you know what that is?
Yep.
What is it?
What is it for?
Yeah, what's that rod do?
Well, that's what adjusts your it's either the toe-in or the steering wheel to straight.
Steering wheel.
Okay.
This does nothing more than adjust the steering wheel straight up and down. It has nothing to do with the alignment on the front end.
You called me about it. And I remember you know, when Mark calls you up, a lot of times he'll get like 2-3 sentences in before he knows who he's talking to.
Okay, Jeremy. Bye. Jeremy's gone. I'll tell you the story when we get back, but he's not going to tell the story. I'm going to tell the story. But you know what? He doesn't know anything about artificial grass at all. Not a single thing. You know, he knows everything about cars, but when you talk artificial grass to this Jeremy, you might as well be talking to my grandson. Holy mackerel. So I knew he was going to try to tell, but he doesn't remember that I have the control of his microphone. So he's over here there listening, but he doesn't really have an idea. Tim, please stay there because we're going to get you first. I promise. 602-508-0960. We have four open lines available for the rest of you. 602-508-0960. Sitting here with Bob and Ellen Frisbee, who own Larry Harker's Auto, and one of their techs named Jeremy. All the buttons to make sure everything's working, and I got to get speakers off of the studio. Bob and Ellen Frisbee, who own Larry Harker's Auto, and their son-in-law Jeremy, who Bob and Jeremy are a pair that you couldn't draw a better pair. There's not going to be anybody better than them. There might be somebody as good as them, but I can tell you right now, Jeremy knows more about cars than I do, but I know more about marriage and girls than he does. I got to go to Tim because Tim's been waiting. Thank you, Tim, for holding. How can we help you?
Mark, how are you?
You know, I've been better, but I'm not north of the, I'm not south of the dirt, so I'm pretty happy today.
All right. This is a question about my wife's Cadillac. It's a 2014 SRX. Got about 57K on it. And just for full disclosure, she's in the other room listening.
So is this your first wife or your fifth wife?
we'll have our 40th this year. So
good for you.
I'm hoping next year will be the 41st, I hope.
And wait, hold on. How many years you guys got?
What? 50.
50? And I'm 46. So, hey, listen, you're in company of other people.
You're in good company.
Yeah.
You're in good
company. And all I can tell you is your wife probably said this to you, like my wife says to me, and she says, I know how you're going to die. And I said, well, falling off a horse or in a car wreck. And she says, no, a bullet wound in the ear. And so I think that's a hint. But anyway, we're ready.
Okay. Cadillac 2014 SRX, about 57K on it. I'll give you a quick background thing that may or may not be important. About 2 weeks ago or so, it started to lose track of the fob that was inside the car right next to the dash. A little history on that fob. It has taken two trips through the Maytag in my wife's pocket. And,
oh, yeah, blame it on your wife. What a man.
That's why she's in the other room.
That's right. Hey, what's her first name? Tell her we're going to stick up for her.
Jean.
Jean. So, Jean, yeah. We're going to stick up for you. Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
Oh, man, there's, what, three of you against me now?
Yeah.
All right.
Four. If you turn my mic back on.
All right. Well, anyway, the Maytag fob, in my view, became unreliable, and I didn't think much more of it. Flash forward to yesterday. She drove it to work, which is only less than a mile. Everything was normal, except when she got out to get into it to come home, it was dead. No lights on the dash, and obviously no crank. And so she called me, and I was at work, and I came by later on and jumped it. And that made things happen, but it made erratic things happen, and it did not crank. The dash was doing a lot of the stuff that it does when you first turn the car on, which I think is computers initializing and stuff, the speedometer pointer moving full circle and things like that. And it was giving very odd alerts, like roll the window up and down on the driver's side. The hood is open, which it was.
Okay. What you're telling us is the car has lost its mind, and it's doing all kinds of weird stuff. So I think 5 gallons of gas in the back seat and a road flare, your problem solved. And Jeremy?
Well, let me give you a quick synopsis. This may or may not have anything to do with your key fob if it shut off. But when the battery goes dead, there's a lot of things that have to be reset. So what you're seeing is the car you know, a lot of times I'll have to relearn the idle. The windows have to be reprogrammed, or their automatic function has to go all the way up and all the way down. So a lot of things are normal when the battery goes dead. Your main problem, though, needs to be why did the battery go dead? And until we figure that out, I think the rest of it's going to be kind of immaterial.
Yeah, I think you need to chase the battery dead first. I don't think we need to deal with the fob. Besides that, Jeremy, I don't know about you, but my wife's fobs go through the washer and dryer all the time.
Bob's does too.
Yeah,
many times. Never had a problem.
Take them apart and blow them out, and usually they're fine. You know, it's only got one screw.
We never blow it out, do we? We just dry it out. Yeah. It's going through the dryer too.
That's right. That's all you got to do is make sure the dryer's on a little longer. But we got to fix the no crank, no start, no lights first. A bad connection at the battery can cause this. An alternator diode can cause all kinds of problems. But let's work on that first. I don't think this is a fob issue. I think it's a power supply issue to the engine or to the car. So
I think so, too. But she told me I had to tell you about the fob. And she's listening, Mark.
Okay. Well, if she needs a new fob, I know this locksmith will come out and just reprogram her fob. And she can pick whether she wants diamonds or sapphires or if she wants it pink or to match her phone case or all that kind of stuff. So if she wants a fob.
No.
What she really
wants
needs?
My fob.
Oh, you know what she really needs? How many years have you been married?
50.
50. She needs a new diamond is what she needs. Take him down, Gil. What was his wife's name?
Jean.
Jean, at 50 years old, I plan on giving my wife a diamond the size of a quarter. And
Jean,
I think Tim
Jean's
should
gonna
do...
be happy. Jean's going to be happy.
And so, see, we have the button for him. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Newer cars and all this stuff, and
well, wait a minute. Well, Ryan, we want to know what your wife thinks it is. I'm in my marriage counselor hat today.
My wife thought it had to do with electric cars, and that every time they come to a stop, they shut down or something, and then they have to push their button to start back.
Jeremy, give me a 30-second. What's going on?
Okay. Well, you're both right. They are stopping, and it's basically to help conserve gasoline. So in a lot of cars, you take your foot off the gas, it will shut the engine off. You put your foot on the brake, and as soon as you let your foot off of the brake, that engine restarts before you can even get over to the gas. And that's completely normal, and it's a econ mode, and it'll do it with multiple cars. But yeah, it is shutting off and restarting that fast every time.
You see, they're fighting for fuel economy to a tenth of a gallon. So if they shut the engine off at a traffic light, they're going to pick up that tenth of a gallon, and the car will pass the tailpipe test. Electric cars, of course, you don't hear them come up to the traffic light because they don't have the rumble of an engine. But there's lots of gas. I'll tell you what the real learning curve is. You're driving your new vehicle home, and you've got this big monster motor in it, a big four-cylinder, and you're just so happy with how it runs, and you pull up to an intersection, the engine dies, and you don't really know it, but you see the oil pressure fall to nothing. Now you're at a traffic light wondering what's going on. And that's exactly what happened to me the first time I drove the Chevy. Yeah. The Chevy truck is the oil pressure fell to zero, and I didn't know what to do. I thought I had popped the motor or something, but it just dies and then it restarts. Like Jeremy said, the exact same thing. It's that the car is smart enough to know that you're coming to a stop. It's going to kill the engine, and the starter on those are huge. It's not like they have normal starters. They're really heavy duty for the constant starting as you stop and start. So I don't know who won the bet.
That's what I was wondering, if it was going to put more wear and tear on all the parts that when you start your thing, your engine back up.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Now I get to sell you two batteries, more starters.
Yeah. And install them all. And then if your wife's name is Kelly, it's twice as much money. So anyway, Ryan, that's what it is. All of us are admiring you for being able to go 80 miles, 80 to 100
we
a week.
We run, too. Matter of fact, we just ran last night. How far did we go?
Three and a half in last night.
Yeah.
So.
Three and a half miles?
I run four days a week, so that's good. And they do 100 miles?
Yeah, 80 to 100, he said.
Yeah, wow.
That's a lot.
And see, Bob and I are going to...
As a matter of fact, you guys answered this mystery just in time, because I am sitting here just outside the mountain preserve to kind of meet my wife halfway on a 24-mile run she's doing today.
Good for you.
Not only will I refill her water, but I'll give her an answer to the question we've asked.
And you know what? Don't say you heard it from the radio. Say, you know, I got on the internet on my phone, and I figured this out.
Yeah, I figured it out.
Yep. You be the hero. Bob, I just can't do it. I can't do it. It's I was gonna go in the wife area, but I chickened out. Yeah. And we're gonna go to the phones. All right, Patrick, you're up next. What can we do for you?
Good morning. Well, this is a follow up.
Okay.
Last Saturday, I talked to you guys. I had a ported problem with leaking CV boots on an 09 Lexus.
Right.
And I didn't tell you this, but the estimate from a dealer was $1,400 to replace the boots and the axles and the rest of it. So seemed excessive. I went to Thompson's, who happens to be about 8 minutes away from my house. And they said, well, we'll look at it. You may not need to replace them. So they ran it up on the lift, called me down. I looked at it, and just the right one was swinging grease. And I said, well, do you have to replace them both? He says, no, we just do this one. Bottom line is they were out of there in about 4 hours. And in addition to an oil change also. And I was out of there for about $570 versus $1,400. So, anyway, good people to deal with. Appreciate the fact that you got these guys on your list.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know,
Brian and Joey are just great people to deal with.
You know, Brian is one of the owners, and he's, I tell people, he's exactly the person you want to bring your daughter home. He's just that kind of a guy. But I agree with everything you said. We can do two boots or we can do one, but there's no really overlap in labor or parts. Two separate labor jobs. So he was right, and I agree with him. If the left one's not gone and you just want to do the right one, that's fine. I want to walk away from the dealer label, please, and let's talk about dealers, independents, chain stores, mom and pop. What the pricing discrepancy you just talked about happens every day in our world, every single day.
Yeah.
But what you did is exactly perfect because you tried somebody and you liked them and they did a good job. And I think the best part of what they did is they forced you to come down and look at it. And when we do the show and tell and the dog and pony show, there's no question the customer understands what a boot looks like and what a leaking one looks like and what a good one looks like. And so I really like that they did that for you. So thank you very much, Patrick. That's Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street in Mesa, just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are just a really swell couple that you can talk to and admire. And they're just good people. And both of them have had gas station businesses in their families that go back to the 50s. Jeremy and his wife Kelly want to say that, I'm gonna take that and run with it. I'm gonna find out where she works, and I'm gonna have a new desk tag name. But anyway, I'm glad the girls got a laugh at it.
Oh yeah,
so
it's a lot of fun.
All righty, let me tell you about a couple of other good shops. There's two guys that are a mile apart. Kurtz Automotive. He's at Bell and I-17, and a mile north of him is Action Auto, and Tom owns it. Those two guys are best of buddies. Those two guys would never crap on one another. Those two guys don't badmouth anybody anyway. But when you're on the I-17 corridor, it doesn't make any difference whether you go to Action or whether you go to Action or Kurtz. I get this straight. Action or Kurtz, both of them are good guys. I've sent customers to both of them, and they've done nothing wrong and made me proud each and every time. So if you live on that I-17 corridor, just remember this. I-17 in Bell is Kurtz, northeast corner. I-17 in Deer Valley is Action Auto, and he's in the northwest corner. Northeast corner on Bell, northwest corner on the rest of them. So, on Action. So that's an easy way to determine where to go. And if you already have a shop, that's fine. But if you're looking for one, like I always say, just go get an oil change, see how they treat you, see if they try to sell you the moon, all that kind of stuff. And that makes all the difference in the world. If they have your best interest in front of theirs, or not. And that's the difference between good guys and bad guys. Gil, do we have any other callers?
Nope, lines are open.
Okay, we've got one more caller we can take, so if you want to call us at 602-508-0960. Ellen and Bob, twice a week for us, and I'm sure for you, you're in that same position that somebody bid this and they want you to look at it.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. Mm-hmm. That's happening to us almost every day. It's kind of... And we find the path of least resistance is, it's not beating up the other shop. It's a matter of, let's go look at the car. And so, you know, tire wear. I need the whole front end rebuilt, and I need a set of tires. How old are these? 9.5 years old. Do you drive straight? No, I deliver newspapers. So he's constantly turning right and left. The outside edges of the tires are worn. Who cares? It 1 and 1 equals 2. But our industry has turned for the worst. We've been in this before where we're starting to beat up one another. And there's a lot of that going on, but it's easier just to take the high road. And it happens at the dealers, and at the chain stores and at the independent, shops. It happens to all of them. Sometimes it's one more than the other. And sometimes it's the reverse. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what kind of an economy that we have right now. So right now with this pandemic and with right now with everybody home, all of us, our sales have dropped.
One of the big problems we're having right now is people are getting estimates from somebody, and then they call us and say, I need an estimate on this. Our biggest problem with that is we don't know that that's what you need.
Yes.
So I hope people don't get upset with us when they say, hey, we really need to get the car in, let us look at it, and then I can give you a fair estimate on something. But most people think, well, as long as he said we need it, this is what we need and how much, and it's a cut and dry figure.
And there's a few of those cases, a few, maybe 15 or 20%, where you can say, all right, what's the symptom? And 99% of the time, they don't know what the symptom is. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is, what's the repair? So you say, the tires are wearing abnormally, and I need all front end stuff. Well, what are the tires wearing at? Well, they said it was. Well, did you look at the tires? Yeah. Well, is the inside worn more than the outside, or is the outside edge? I don't know. So you can't tell the difference? Then there is no difference. So it's a matter of symptoms. We had somebody in the other day that had a cooling system problem. His cooling system problem was he didn't have a heater for the first 30 minutes, but his home to work is 20 minutes. We're not going to warm up the water that fast. So now him not having a heater, and this was a dashboard R&R with a heater core that was an 11-hour heater core. So at $100 an hour is $1,100 in labor. So the symptom doesn't match the and I think this was an older car that had a vacuum control, heater control valve, and that's actually what it was, is the heater control valve. How many times have you seen the Fords come in with the hose broken off the plastic part of the manifold? And that kicks the heater control valve off. So there's just lots of that. We entertain the same kind of phone calls. It's in the customer's best interest to just bring the car to us. If they want to hold the estimate close to their chest, that's okay. Mm-hmm. What we want to know is the symptoms and what they said. And we'll answer the symptoms and with what we said.
What we see, too, is that a lot of them are wanting them to do the maintenance prematurely. And we see that because we have a guideline that we follow. And that we say, hey, no, you don't need to. And they have a laundry list of what they want to do. And Bob will say, hey, no, it's not due. You know, we can do it, but it's not due.
That happens all the time in my world. And this is what I tell ladies and men, no matter where you're at, listen, let's do this. Let me go get my owner's manual out of the car, and why don't you show me where I'm due? And that's a hard question to answer when you're lying. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way. And then you hear this. Well, that's not an Arizona owner's manual. They don't make, they make one for Arizona. Arizona is different. And then the answer is, would you order me one? because mm-hmm. there's no such animal.
Yeah.
So everybody has the, well, you need to do this 100,000 mile transmission service because we're in Arizona. Well, there's no asterisk next to it in my owner's manual. Mm-hmm. So it's, but on the other hand, if you have a cooling system that's a complete wreck and it's full of rust and stuff, and if the cooling flush is the 80 or 100,000 miles and it's 60,000 miles, you're looking at rusty water, then that's beneficial.
Right.
But the bottom line is, folks, is it's in your best interest to be at the shop when you're asking them to do something. I know that at our shop, we won't do bidding over the phone. Because and I use this as an example. Does it have Hydro Boost? How long is the control arm? Does it have ball joints up and down or left and right? So if you ask them these silly questions, I can't bid it unless you mm-hmm. can tell me the answer to those. So those are the kinds of things, but it's very difficult to give a bid. And what you're doing is you're spending a lot of your time working up an estimate because somebody else says it's bad.
And how many times do they actually come in?
And you're right. There's two issues. How many times after spending that money do they come in? And number two is when you give them an estimate, you don't really know if it's going to fix the symptoms, but right. you're going to be held responsible for them. We'll see you next week.